live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to share a lot on health and healing, including how to live a longer life, how the Chinese have found a food that fights breast cancer from the BBC, and how also a study positively links sugary drinks to overweight. That's been something a lot of people who didn't believe that now should face, the cause and effect. Also today from the Pueblo chieftain, we're going to talk about the edible grass seeds vital for a healthy diet, and that means whole grains and the seeds that come from them, and also vitamin insufficiency can accelerate the aging process because it accelerates diseases associated with aging, and a lot more in health and healing. From our commentary section today, we have two. One is from Chris Hedges from Truth Dig, A Last Chance for Resistance. I'm going to be sharing a commentary I wrote yesterday, taking a look at something from the New York Times, where they rightly criticized President Trump for not being able to apologize, not looking at the consequences of his actions, and not caring about what happens from what he does and the people that support him. So, rightly so, I agree that any time someone as powerful as a president makes some serious mistakes, they should be held accountable. My concern is, why haven't they been equally critical of all the other presidents, in the United States for the last 36 years? I'll give you specifics of how American exceptionalism is just propaganda. And what we should be very conscious of, what we should apologize for to the world for our hegemonic philosophies. So all that's coming. Plus, we have some audio clips, including since I'm doing a new documentary on vaccines, that my hope is once and for all will establish the scientific basis that there is neither safety nor efficacy for a single vaccine. And what we thought was efficacy, meaning that they actually work, is only a bad science counting antibodies that have never been proven to actually in and of themselves be protective of a given disease. So we're going to do that. But before we do that, I want you to hear what happens when an autism mom goes up against a panel on PBS. Her name is Janet Egdahl, and she'll tell you her story. But then I have a very short piece from an Irish hearing where a young, I'm guessing she's 14, 13, named Rebecca, wheelchair-bound, goes into a conference where she asks, would the woman promoting, from the Public Health Service, promoting mandatory human papilloma vaccines, Gardasil, would she take responsibility for the consequences to people like herself who were put into a wheelchair because of it? I want you to hear this exchange. It's a little difficult because this was just recorded from someone in the audience, but what you don't hear, I'll tell you. It's only 2 minutes long. Also, one of the best descriptions of why we should not have any nuclear weapons at all, it's a short animated clip. You won't be able to see the animation, but you'll be able to hear the short 1.5 minute comments, and I think they're just spot on and terrific. So you see, we have a great variety of topics, all meant to empower people, all meant to allow us to be able to become better thinkers on these topics. And we always begin with health and healing. And this is important because two Chinese dietary staples, mushrooms and green tea, may have the power to ward off breast cancer. A study of over 2,000 Chinese women in the International Journal of Cancer, major peer-reviewed journal, found large quantities of both in the diet cut breast cancer by 90. That's 90%. So research suggests the chemicals in the foods block tumor growth and boost the body's natural defenses against cancer. Quote, and this is from the study, that more research is needed to confirm these observations and find out if they are relevant for women in the UK, according to the BBC. Well, here's good news. We have over 1,000 additional studies on green tea and mushrooms showing they fight cancer. So yes, there's no need for any more research. In fact, I'll go out on a limb here and say that 95% of all the research into any given nutrient does not further support or diminish the need for it. You have over 30,000 studies on vitamin C, 40,000 studies on vitamin E, 500,000 studies on vitamins and minerals alone. So why do you need more? You don't. It's much like the monotheistic mindset of the tobacco industry. Well, we need more studies, but you've had 100 years of studies. I know, but we still need more to be absolutely, positively certain. So let's say that you end up being certain. Let's say the next study shows yes. That means that you've been willing to sacrifice 100 years and 20 million Americans' lives so you could continue to make a profit. So my suggestion is we must completely rethink how science has controlled much of our reality. Because when science becomes ideology, when science becomes a cult, when science becomes a metaphorical religion of belief, when science is proprietary, then it's not science anymore. It's propaganda, and it works against us. So I'm saying on the record today, we do not need another single study on vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, green tea, mushrooms. We have thousands upon thousands. We have 7,000 studies on ginseng. We don't need any more. In fact, one of the problems I have with the National Academy of Science and many of the government's National Institutes of Health is that they just give money automatically to the same groups of people to do the same research ad nauseum, having nothing to do with helping the American public. It has everything to do with helping universities, research departments, individual scientists who are in that insider's loop. And once you're in the loop, you never again have to worry about money for the rest of your life. The taxpayer will give it. You don't have to give anything at all. You just go up and make a statement that, gee whiz, you know, we're doing great research. And the people will go ahead and approve it. Boy, we could reform everything in this country. We won't reform anything ever in this country. We're not capable of that. We just don't have that. Intellectually, we don't have it. With the intent to do well, we don't have it. With the intent to see the public's interest done, we do not have that. So at this moment, I'm saying it is impossible, completely impossible, to reform and change any single institution in America. So you're on your own, on everything. And if you don't get that, you should not be listening to this program. You should turn this program off and never listen to me again. There's no one out there. There is no there out there. There is no house of wise men and women. It does not exist. You do not have objectivity in non-commercial radio. You have censorship on politics and Dreckenmeyer as bad as you do in corporate media. There's no special sacred place. It doesn't exist. That's not set out of negativity. It's set out of just absolute honesty. So the good part of that is when you do see something that's positive and you do have positive experiences and you have positive insights and you have positive intuitive vibrational feelings, trust it. You do not need the sanctification of any official body to justify your truths and reality. And if we took that common sense a long time ago, we wouldn't have all this death and disease and disharmony in our society. So just remember, they have all these studies, and yet the dimwits, the people that promoted a pedophile for 40 years at the BBC, one of the most corrupt organizations I've ever seen, most biased institutions and media, they say, well, yes, it's a big study, 2,000 people. Did you actually, with all your resources, you're the largest broadcasting system in the world, did you actually see how many other thousands of studies on green tea? No, you didn't, or you wouldn't be making the statement. Or is there some pharmaceutical company in the background saying, let's not get people thinking that somehow they can prevent breast cancer when we've got to give them mammograms. We've got to give them tamoxifen. We've got to give them preventive chemotherapy. But don't you have a free medical system? Yes, you do. But the drugs that you give people in that system, they're not free, and they're profitable. And those people reach deeply into every institution, not the least of which is the BBC. And you want to know where? I'll tell you where, because I broke this story. This is my own original story. The most important alternative doctor, cancer doctor in the world, in history, was a man named Dr. Joseph Issels. Joseph Issels in Germany at Tegernsee Lake. It's a clinic. Beautiful clinic in the Alpines, was treating terminal cancer patients and having a 16.6% cure rate. That means people who had been given up, where that cure rate in America is zero, he has almost 17%. He had over 50,000 patients, and his files were open to anyone. So a man named Gordon Higginson from the BBC went over, because he had heard about this guy, and he and a whole crew spent time tracking down Dr. Issels' patients from around the world. People who had been into his clinic 5 years, 10 years, 15 years before, who had terminal cancer, received no other therapy except Dr. Issels, and today were alive and well. And they had hundreds of them. Enough that they went back and spoke with the Dr. Richardson from the Royal College, and he confirmed that this was legitimate. This was not quackery. So he produced a documentary called Go Climb the Mountain. And an Aubrey Singer from the BBC kept that from being broadcast on instructions from physicians within the Royal Society. And so I heard about this, and I went to England, but I couldn't find him. So I went to Ireland. I didn't have an address, knew where he was. Literally showed up in Dublin with no idea where this guy was. But he was a journalist. He was an author. He had published some best-selling books, and he was no longer at the BBC. So I tracked him down just by, have you ever heard of this man? Mind you, we didn't have Google then. We didn't have search engines on the internet. I had no way of, except the old-fashioned way. But after a couple of days, I actually came to this old country lane, and I found Gordon Higginson. I went over, I interviewed him, and he told me about it. And so I went backtrack, and I went to the Royal Academy, and I found these doctors, and I said, why was it that you were against Dr. Joseph Issels? And one guy was very honest. He said, because we didn't believe it possible. Well, but you had the actual medical records. None of these people had been diagnosed and given their treatment by Dr. Issels. He had only done it after everything else had been done, and they were dying. So if you looked at medical records from major hospitals around the world, including right here in England, why couldn't you at least be open to the idea that he had a therapy? And the idea was that his therapy, they couldn't wrap their mind around. It was not chemotherapy, radiation. He was a surgeon, by the way. But it was about getting rid of local toxins, getting rid of mercury fillings, getting rid of local bacteria, cleaning up the gut, doing ozone, doing juices, doing colonics, doing colitis toxins, Lincoln bacteriophage, drinking 13 glasses of fresh green juice a day. And they couldn't understand that because there was nothing in the scientific literature to support it. So they simply said it couldn't happen. So their logic was perfect. If there's a scientific body that determines that the only way you can treat a disease, the only accepted and hence legitimate way, is what's in this book. So this is the current scientific consensus. Now that's an oxymoron, science and consensus. because everything important ever discovered in science never came from consensus, not once. It came from individuals uniquely challenging the existing consensus to find the consensus was wrong. I'll give you one great example. All of science, every engineer in the world, every scientific publication said that no human body can ever go more than a 4-minute mile. And yet, he did. Bannister, 1958, 358 mile. So they were all right. They were right because their consensus was that they had determined that the body could not have the ability to go faster. Hence, they could not be wrong because their logic was not wrong, because no one had ever done it before. Because no one had ever done it before, it couldn't be wrong. Therefore, the consensus was it can't be done until he did it. They were all wrong. There was no apologies. You couldn't climb Mount Everest until Hillary did it. You couldn't cross the Atlantic until Lindbergh did it. You couldn't hit 60 home runs until Babe Ruth did it. And people were certain of it. So all the time the person that's finding the breakthrough is not following consensus ever. They are following something that is almost counter everything logical and reasonable at the time. So when they said it can't be done because we've never seen anyone drink green tea and reverse a cancer or meditate and reverse stress or depression or do Tai Chi and reverse cortisol levels, and since we have not seen it and since it's not published in our journals, there can be no other truth. Our logic is perfect. We are the final arbiters of all that is true. It is only orthodoxy, orthodox in religion, orthodox in politics. You only have two orthodox political parties, the Democrats and Republicans. They're both orthodox. They both believe in the same God, the God of free market capitalism, the Milton Friedman School, the Chicago School, the old boys, neoliberalism. There is no other way except the free market. And therefore, our testament is that you are a heretic if you say that the free market should be challenged or supporting socialism. Our logic is complete. We control the system. We control the International Monetary Fund. We control the World Bank. We control the Federal Reserve. We control the European Central Bank. We control all other major markets. We control the economic model that is used. Every single economic model of any institution is based upon our system. Therefore, we should never ask anyone outside the system for their opinion because they are the heretics. They are the other. Ask anyone outside of the religion. You are not a part of our religion. Give us your input. You never hear that. You hear, we're the only truth. Ours is the only God. And if you do not believe in us, if you do not succumb to us, then we will have nothing to do with you or we will hurt you. And hence the demonization, the McCarthyism of medicine, of nutrition, of environment, of economics, because the one or two or 10 or 200 people who said, what you're doing doesn't make any sense. You're actually creating problems. You're not creating solutions. And someone says, but we're being rewarded for failing. We're being rewarded for our efforts. We won't call it failure. We'll call it our efforts. And as long as our efforts are noble, then we should be rewarded, not criticized. Even if every patient we treat dies. If every single patient in the world died, nothing would change in medicine unless the paradigm changed. And the paradigm changes never. It has to completely destroy itself and a new paradigm take its place. But we've had one paradigm for over 100 years, and it's not about to change. It's loaded with $3.3 trillion a year. No one's going to give up the power, the prestige, the money, and the influence. So that's how it works. So you got to understand how all this comes together before you appreciate this. So this is all part of what I'm saying is, if you go into your doctor and say, Doctor, I heard Gary Nall say that there was a BBC report that if a woman took green tea and if a woman took mushrooms like shiitake and maitake mushrooms, she can reduce her risk of breast cancer by 90%. The doctor cannot accept that. It's not a part of the paradigm. And hence the logic of it is only what is in the paradigm can be accepted. Anything outside the paradigm must be rejected, even if it's later found to be true. So someone who relies solely upon being told by someone that they need to believe in, you need to believe in the minister, the imam, the rabbi, the priest, the economist, the banker, the television personality, you need to believe in a Rush Limbaugh, Rachel Maddow, you need to believe in a Reverend Ike or a Charles Gibson, you need to believe in a Charlie Rose or a Bill O'Reilly. These are the people we need to believe in because we assume a responsibility to obey them by listening to them uncritically. It is irrelevant to us whether they are honest or not, whether they're truth or not, whether they've been accurate or inaccurate. That is completely irrelevant. They are a part of our belief. We are co-connected. We are genetically connected. Our DNA has been transmorphed into one common belief. And hence, 50 million Germans could not, without a blink of an irony towards their devout Christian policies, see 7 million people exterminated, the Jews, the Gypsies, the gays, and others, and the blacks, without any questioning the orthodoxy, because the orthodoxy had it right. Ours is the pure gene, theirs is not. The doctor says, I'm the doctor, you're not. The oncologist says, I'm the oncologist. Another person says, but I'm an oncologist. And one says, but I use chemotherapy. And the other says, I don't. I use isothiocyanates. I use indole-3-carbinol. I use a vegan diet. I use juicing. And the other says, then you are wrong. You're a heretic. You do not believe in us, and therefore you should not be a part of us, and therefore we must exclude you and denigrate you so no one else is ever infected with the virus of your truth. Your truth is a lie. But the other person says, but I'm curing patients. You're not. You're killing patients. But we're killing patients, but we're actually being rewarded for it, and no one's questioning. The media does not question it. They promote us. The government funds us. The citizens line up. 99% of all citizens use orthodoxy. So who is right? And I'm suggesting you better pay attention to the basics. Because if you don't, then one day you will end up with your cancer that you could have prevented. You'll end up broke where you shouldn't have. You end up in a system that uses your money against you and not for you. You end up in a body politic voting for Hillary or a Barack or someone else that does not represent your interest. But you need to believe that they do, because you've refused to be critical in your thinking and you allow their critical thinking to be your critical belief. So how smart is that? So, the future rests solely in the hands of those who are willing to get off the intellectual, the emotional, and all the other grids you've been wired to, hardwired since a child, and become the person you were meant to be. And that is what's important. And finally, in our health segment today, from the New York Times, quote, a first-of-its-kind study released today definitively links soda consumption with an obesity epidemic which costs California taxpayers $41 billion a year annually. So let's just break this down. They looked at 43,000 adults, 4,000 adolescents, and UCLA Center for Health Public Research. They analyzed them. And so they found this connection. Okay, that's just one connection. Here's what I'm talking about. Why did it take all this time for the New York Times to be able to say, gee whiz, sugar causes obesity? When we were saying this and debating this 45 years ago, and people before me years before that. Now, if it were costing $41 billion a year just with that kind of obesity epidemic, then think of how much California would be saving if it actually implemented a healthy program with telling the truth about the cause of disease for hamburgers, hot dogs, French fries. Pesticides used on all your farms in the fertile valleys of the San Joaquin area. And what about the fluoride in your water? What about the electromagnetic pulses in the air, the cell phones and cell towers? Would you also be saving money? Hundreds of billions of dollars. So let's just understand, neither the state of California, all of its scientists, all of its public health officials, were able to go forward and actually state we've got to change our diet until it became official policy. And only when the New York Times could say that it was officially linked, as if this were the first time in history that, wow, my God, oh, holy moly, look what happened. The New York Times just allowed us to believe for the first time that sugar causes obesity in our soft drinks. But does sugar in our cereals cause obesity? But that's a separate study. Does sugar in our muffins and our rolls and our donuts? We haven't done that study. We can't say that. And we have Dr. Schmuck here, who's got 14 other Dr. Schmucks, and all the Dr. Schmucks in the world, and they're all Dr. Schmucks, aren't they? Will say, nah, we can't really say, and we don't want to say, but if we had 3,000 more studies done over the next 600 years, then as long as it doesn't offend anyone, as long as there's no sponsor going to be affected, as long as no manufacturer is going to be affected, then maybe, possibly, hopefully, we could make some more definitive statement about the sugar in donuts. But until that time, keep eating it. Okay, I think I'm understanding. Do you? You really allowing a ray of sunlight to come into that brain? Gee whiz. And that's how it all works. That's how truth, as sparse as it is, and truth from the New York Times, like finding one grain of sand on the ocean floor and thinking that you've just got all the sand on the ocean. You haven't. You've gotten one grain. Look around. There's a lot more. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. I'm Gary Noll. I'm not in the studio today. I'm out on the road filming three additional major original reports. They'll be broadcast over the next several months, probably the next, starting in about 4 months, over the next year. Right now, the number one documentary showing in the United States is Plant Codes. We're happy about that, and more to come. I'm going to go to some audio clips in a moment, but I wanted to also share some additional insights into this New York Times piece from yesterday and what I wrote about it. Yes, you were right in your condemnation of Trump and his arrogance, his immaturity, his inability to understand deeper issues, surrounding himself with incompetent people who are all strongly allied to an oligarchical plan. No problem with that. My problem is, where have you been for the last 36 years? Let me give some examples. What we have to apologize for that no president apologized for. FDR abandoning Poland and allowing its divisions in favor of Hitler. Imprisonment of over 100,000 Japanese Americans in intern camps. Reagan finally apologized for it in 1983, but not FDR, and not Truman, and not Eisenhower, and not Kennedy. Under President Truman, of course, dropping the atomic bombs, the second of which, neither bomb, by the way, was needed to be dropped. The second Red Square, McCarthyism, falsely persecuting and imprisoning hundreds of Americans. The start of MKUltra in the early 1950s and continuing to 1973, and by the way, still continuing today, massive psychological experiments on citizens and the use of various drugs. Trying to bust unions and having union members drafted into the military from 1946, massive railroad strikes. Eisenhower, formal annexation of Hawaii, long after U.S. Sugar and Fruit Corporation's coup of 1898, and Clinton, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, remember they were co-joined, it was formally approved, and then only in 1993 was it apologized for. Overthrowing Iranian government and installing the Shah of Iran, Obama almost apologized for it, but then backed down. Nothing unusual there. Eisenhower launched the Korean War and promoting the new era of nuclear power. Under John F. Kennedy, he was aware of Operation COINTELPRO of J. Edgar Hoover, massive infiltration and surveillance and disruption of free speech movements, including all the civil rights movement, the Puerto Rican independence movement, and the Nationals Lawyers Guild, and the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, the American Indian Movement, they're all religious congregations. Even Albert Einstein was spied upon under Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. Also, Robert F. Kennedy as Attorney General wiretapped Martin Luther King. That's when the two Kennedy brothers were a part of the problem. They were part of the deep state. They also supported John F. Kennedy, supported Abdul Arif in Iraq only because he was a staunch anti-communist, slaughtering thousands. But he was enabled by Saddam Hussein. Lyndon Johnson expanded the Vietnam War while lying about the reasons for the war and the Gulf of Tonkin black flag. Agent Orange in Vietnam, responsible for over 1 million Vietnamese deaths or permanent disabilities and birth defects, over 3 million dead in Vietnam. No apologies from any president. Also, Lyndon Johnson was directly in the loop on the assassinations of JFK and Martin Luther King, given all the evidence of government complicity, never apologized. It was under LBJ that there was the invasion of the Dominican Republic under false news. Nixon Kissinger has a long list. The bombing of Cambodia and Laos, U.S. backing of Osama bin Laden in the CIA war against Russia and Afghanistan with the Mujahideen, the support of Pinochet in Chile, Brady Tyson, as head of the U.S. delegation to the U.N., tried to apologize in 1977, but the State Department pressured him not to. Fernando Marcos of the Philippines, his rule of martial law, supported by Nixon and Kissinger from 1972 forward. Mobutu Sese Seko of Zaire, called the Marie Antoinette of Africa. Reagan and Bush created close bonds with this person, ushering in an era also of neoliberal free trade capitalism. As I mentioned earlier in the program, Friedman out of Chicago Economic School was the father of American neoliberalism under Nixon and Kissinger. Gerald Ford, Operation Condor starts, continued under Reagan till 1985, eradicating communists, which were really labor leaders, unionists, progressives, environmentalists, free speech advocates, artists, all the different people in Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Uruguay, and Brazil. Tens of thousands were murdered under Gerald Ford. Under Reagan and Bush, supporting the Nicaragua Contras, kidnapping, rape, torture, massacres of civilians, including children, downing of an Iranian civilian airliner in 1988, while campaigning to succeed Reagan as president. And Bush said, quote, "I will never apologize for the United States. I don't care what the facts are," referring to the incident. Also, his handling of the AIDS epidemic, which is he mostly ignored, and his treatment of gays. Invasion of Grenada under false pretenses of Soviet involvement. It wasn't true. His Nicaragua fight against the Sandinistas. And Manuel Noriega in Panama. Bush was doing... was the head of the CIA when Manuel Noriega was working with the CIA, handling drugs out of there. Then they invaded Panama. Under Clinton and Albright, because they were a triumvirate of dysfunction. Clinton's first launch on terrorism after bombings of the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi and Tanzania by a Muslim U.S. citizen and a former Green Beret instructor, bombing of a Sudan pharmaceutical plant, the Bosnia-Serbia invasion and wars, the Balkanization of Yugoslavia, ushering in the post-Cold War era of corporate dominant globalization. That was under Clinton's financial reforms. They gutted the Glass-Steagall Act, the Future Commodity Trading Act. They created the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, and free trade agreements, all to the detriment of the American public, the workers, the unions, and the environment. The expansion of the death penalty, trashing welfare reforms, lies behind the safety and propaganda of genetically modified foods. Then under Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld and Rice, no apologies for relations with Saudi Arabia and the Osama bin Laden family after 9/11, for negligence of preventing 9/11 based upon prior evidence. Also, the 2003 invasion of Iraq that was completely based upon lies, coming directly from the White House. It was not bad information given to them. It was falsely created intelligence by Cheney, Rumsfeld, Bush, and Rice. The torture outside of international law, the consequence of the TARP bailout, giving hundreds of billions of dollars to the banks, and then it was furthered by Obama without helping a single American. Hurricane Katrina debacle, as many as 1,800 people who died did so from thirst, exhaustion, and violence after the storm, not the storm. Backing Venezuela oligarchs to stage a coup against Chavez. It failed, but they did it under Obama and Clinton. The regime change in Ukraine started with U.S.-backed Ukrainian sniper attacks against both sides. The failure of the Libyan regime change. The continued to defend the regime change in Honduras. The advancing Islamic jihadi groups, especially supporting neo-Al-Qaeda and ISIS, including the Free Syrian Army, all terrorists. We back them, we train them, we fund them. The no apologies for nuclear bombs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki until Obama was the first president to visit Hiroshima, but did not apologize after the visit. The persecution of whistleblowers, more whistleblowers talking about corruption of governmental agencies under Obama and Clinton than all other presidents combined. Civilian deaths due to drone strikes, kill lists, his constructive family detention camps, what he called effective and humane. No, they weren't. They were people who were tortured and killed. And also, so what has the United States actually, for the thousands of things we've done wrong, I can only find the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, started in 1932, ran for 40 years, long after the discovery of penicillin. Clinton finally formally apologized in 1997, and U.S. also conducted syphilis experiments in Guatemala in the 1940s. The U.S. apologized in 2010. In protecting the most wanted Nazi war criminal, Klaus Barbie, and helping him escape capture until 1983, when Reagan finally apologized to the French and the Jews. So now we have this other aspect. What are we exceptional at? Oh, and by the way, the apology for slavery and Jim Crow laws were not officially apologized for as a nation until 2010 by the Congressional House under Obama, but was worded to assure there was no reparations. The wealthiest nation in the world, the United States, with a means to excel in everything, but with the worst health care in the developed world, one of the worst educational systems in the world, certainly of all the developed nations, the highest infant mortality rate in all developed nations, the lowest life expectancy of all developed nations, ranked as dismal in international analysis of fairness at work and economic equality. We've allowed criminal enterprises such as Wall Street firms, all major Wall Street firms, creating economic policies. We've allowed big pharma firms to dictate health care. We seem exceptional at our pace of promoting private interest in destroying the environment and ecology, both at home and abroad. We seem exceptional at hypocrisy on human and civil rights. We can speak democratic values to others, but we do not operate at home in the same principles. We make sure that Saudi Arabia gets to head the Human Rights Commission at the United Nations, and yet they are the world's leading exploiter of human rights. And such is our exceptional democracy that only two parties are permitted anything on a playing field where there should be dozens of political parties. We're exceptional in inequality for the supposed wealthiest nation in the world to have 80% of its population living at or just above or below the poverty level. We have exceptional military while there is exceptional poverty and money going to the military, which it does not need. It is overfunded with massive redundancy and corruption, all because of 400,000 private military contractors that dictate policy. There is no proper health care in America. We have given license for spying and surveillance against all of the rules of the land. We have shredded the Constitution. We promote democracy but are ruled by an oligarchy. Per a recent study from a team from Princeton University professors who came to the conclusion the United States is no longer a democracy but completely governed by an oligarchy. We are exceptional in allowing freedom of corporations to pollute, kill, illegally dump toxins, ignore safety regulations that endanger citizens, but it's illegal and an act of terrorism to protest against them. It's exceptional for, from first grade to 12th grade education, ranking U.S. students at the bottom of the heap of modern nations. It's exceptional for having the highest incarceration rate per capita of any nation, with laws that target minorities for more severe sentencing and treatment than whites. It's exceptional that fossil fuel oil fracking companies are repeatedly lying on critical issues that endanger our lives, and no one goes to jail. So yes, we are exceptional for all the wrong reasons, and we do not apologize for anything. Now, tomorrow, I'll give you a template for the erosion of civil liberties and human rights in the United States and what the war on terror has done to the rule of law, such as the death of habeas corpus. And the Americans are jailed without being charged or being able to confront witnesses against them. Under our right to liberty, there is no longer the right to defend yourself based upon the National Defense Authorization Act. But all that tomorrow. So that's my opinion piece challenging the New York Times. You're right on Trump. Why or where were you at on all these other major crises? And I just touched just the barely 0.001% of what I consider exceptionally wrong with this country. And I would put at the top of the list the lack of objectivity in the media. Now we're going over and hear from a woman who was at in a debate on PBS, and I want you to hear her reason and her research, because she became not just an angry mother, she became an educated activist mother. Her name is Janet. Her last name is Edghill, E-D-G-H-I-L. Here she is.
Janet Edghill spent 28 years as an electrical engineer for the Department of Defense. She recently earned a doctorate to learn about the education of autistic children like her 7-year-old son, who she believes was vaccine injured.
Clarification for our viewers, you mentioned MMR. Is that measles, mumps, rubella? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that's the vaccine that you're referring to, and that
yes.
has received some controversial
coverage.
Yes,
in fact, Merck is being sued by two whistleblowers, and there's also a CDC whistleblower who was providing information to Congressman Posey's office. He's indicated that statistically significant information was withheld from a 2004 study that showed a rapid increase, 3.4-fold in African-American males who received the vaccine prior to 3 years of age. This is very important information. Hopefully, he'll be providing further information. He released an email from Colleen Boyle, who's in charge of developmental disabilities at the CDC, in which she said, well, you know, it's not usually diagnosed until 3. How about if we introduce 18-month-olds and 1-month-olds and 2-year-olds into this? What does that do to our data? So it shows you they're somewhat cooking the books. in some cases. But if I can get, if I can get back to DTaP and to diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, the FDA released a press release in November 2013, and they said, you know, we've been testing Bordetella pertussis vaccine in orangutans, which have a similar physiology for the purposes of this sort of a trial. We have found pertussis germs are now growing in the backs of their throats, and they are contagious for several weeks with pertussis. So we could argue that vaccinated individuals are in fact spreading disease. It's not a catch-all, and we need to elevate this argument or this discussion beyond vaccines good, disease bad.
I just understand what you're saying. I just want to make sure I understand what she's saying.
Okay, let's go ahead.
I just like some clarification.
Let's have a quick moment with you, and then let's go to you, Dr. Horowitz.
I just want to make sure I am understanding what you're saying, because I don't want to misunderstand you. Okay. But you're saying that you're saying that people who are vaccinated against pertussis or whooping cough, for those folks who don't know, are spreading whooping cough to other people?
They are, in fact, spreading whooping cough to other people.
This is where I have a little bit of a problem scientifically with that.
Because
the vaccines, that vaccine is an inactivated vaccine. It doesn't even contain the entire bacteria.
You were right. It only contains
so
antigens.
How does it?
They don't know.
Do scientists know everything?
The answer is no.
You yourself are an engineer. You have a science background. So mm-hmm. you know, although you are not a biologist, you would know then that scientifically does not make sense.
She's very articulate.
Have you taken care of a child with whooping cough? Have you taken care of a child with autism?
Let me answer your question. I received probably at least three or four telephone calls from parents of injured children after vaccines, and I'm sick and tired of it, frankly. The reality is you're not paying any attention to the data of the risks versus what you claim are the benefits. There are significant risks.
As a pediatrician, okay. As a state
Excuse me, let me
the
finish.
The fact that you're not aware that the fact is people spread disease.
Let everyone have a chance to simply say their information. Dr. Horowitz, please go ahead, finish your
Thank
point,
you
and then
much.
I have a follow-up question for you. So if you
Thank
could finish
you.
Your point.
If vaccines worked, why would you be so concerned about those few people, let's say 3% in Hawaii, who, for religious reasons or any other reason, philosophical, they exempt out?
Because
number
I worry
one.
About them.
Oh, yeah, you want herd immunity. Now, wait a minute. Let's take a look at your conflicting interests. Do you work on the board of the National Biosurveillance and Response with Pfizer?
No.
Pfizer is not one of seven members of that board.
It's a government board. It's an
federal advisory committee. Is one of the major people administering decision-making on a national basis with Pfizer Group and representing now an influence on the national response, emergency response?
There are members from different walks of life on
How
that board.
How many are there?
And we are not supposed to be bringing in our sort of commercial interests or
exactly.
whatnot.
Exactly, you're not supposed to be. That's my point.
But
the point
I
is, it's outrageously
Let's
biased.
Make this a little less personal, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about facts. Everyone.
Look, if you saw a murder going on in the street, and you don't report that, you have a public duty to report that, to do everything in your power to stop that crime. That, in fact, that's public duty,
I just
doctor.
Want to clarify,
so
though.
It is personal. There are children that I'm hearing from parents weekly, many of them, who are outraged that the government, in this case, this Dr. Park, represents the entire national security apparatus that is potentially keeping us from an outbreak, an emergency. And the reality is that the manner in which they're going about doing this is injecting foreign RNA, foreign DNA from bacteria, viruses, fungus, yeast, chicken embryo, bovine fetal serum, monkey kidney tissues.
I'd like to
with smallpox,
to your...
it's cow pus. You might as well inject eye of newt, because the reality is they don't know what the heck they're doing.
Okay, I know I do want to get back to you. I would like to give mm-hmm. Dr. Green a chance to talk. And I would also like to just ask everyone, I understand this is a passionate topic, but we're not going to learn anything tonight shouting mm-hmm. over each other. And everyone's been invited here as a guest, so let's not attack anyone. Let's just let everyone have their chance to say something. Dr. Green.
Look, I'm just pleased to be the calm one. Okay, so, you know, it's been a long day. Okay, but look, first of all, I don't know everyone at this table well. Dr. Park is an extraordinary individual. I'm going to say this because it's not acceptable to me personally to have someone reference murder and this and that and then accuse someone. This is a person that works to prevent, from her paradigm, which I respect, and if others don't, that's okay, to prevent infection from spreading. I turn to her and trust her to protect my children. I'm just saying that as a father, okay? Now, people can argue about immunizations, they can argue about the mandates, and they can argue about the efficacy. But let's keep it at science. And it's good to talk about whether this science is good or a better study could be done. That's how science works, and we should always endeavor to improve science. But I will not allow vaccinations and their value to be dismissed. By the same token, I never, you know, talk down someone if they're concerned, because we can always learn more. And if we learn through science that vaccinations hurt someone, if we learn that, then we will adjust them or we'll change policy.
Then let me ask you this follow-up question from Bill in IAEA. Are there reasons other than vaccinations that might account for more cases of autism? And I'll give everyone a chance to respond with their opinion. But Dr. Green, may I start with you?
Absolutely. I'm very focused on this issue. Autism is tragic. It breaks my heart. It breaks everyone's heart that has a child. Absolutely, though, is, from my perspective, a multifactorial problem. I have personally been very concerned about many factors that affect children and result in autism, result in autism spectrum diagnoses. I think, personally, that a lot of the problems from industrialized society are contributing. I think it is pesticides. I think our diagnoses are becoming more sophisticated, and that has changed the number. And so those are the kind of concerns I have. And I'm also open at all times for the science to absolutely proceed. So we find out whether there's a genetic cause, whether it's fractured DNA. I don't know. I'm not a molecular biologist, but I know it's not just one factor, because that doesn't make sense to me as a developmental problem.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking with a dear friend who her life has been affected by this, and she said something to me that I was wondering, is this a middle ground for everyone? She said, I believe that vaccines have value for people. She thought that there was a possibility that her child and other children might fall into a group for whom vaccines are dangerous, and that perhaps there need to be studies to identify if there are some children for whom vaccines are dangerous, while for the majority of the public, they are beneficial. Any thoughts on that? Is there some sort of middle ground there?
I think we know that, and I think that we can agree with that. And I think that, you
so
know,
might
if you're happy to look at this, this is a peer-reviewed literature about vaccinomics, how we're determining, with the ultimate goal of individualizing vaccines to different genetic polymorphisms. I mean, we know that they hurt people. And you is the only product that I know of that is indemnified. So in 1986, a law was passed called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And so what the intent of this act was to give easy access to a financial settlement for children who were injured by vaccines. But vaccine manufacturers had come and said, you know, this is an unavoidably unsafe product. We're not going to make them anymore. And so to ensure a steady supply of vaccines, the government went ahead and indemnified vaccine manufacturers. Now, if you were to prescribe a medication for me, and let's say fainting was a side effect, and I called you in a week and I said, you know, I fainted twice, you would probably say, it's listed as a side effect. You should stop taking it. But if the minute we say that vaccines can cause side effects, which are all listed right there in the vaccine inserts, and some of them are pretty horrific, and I have one for DTaP here. Autism and SIDS are listed.
And DTaP is, can you explain?
Sorry, that's the diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis. Which, so the whole cell pertussis vaccination was causing an awful lot of vaccine injuries. And so they try, in an effort to make it safer, they remove, they take only the antigen, so only the part of the cell that's going to produce an antibody.
Thank you for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now, Utrecht Lee coming right at you.